Hello and welcome once again to Inside Jobs with me, Robert Barclay, where we get to meet in-house agency leaders to talk about their lives and their work. Inside Jobs is brought to you by IHAF, the leading professional association for in-house agencies, along with EKCS, who allow in-house agencies to create by managing the production of their ideas into compelling marketing assets. Given his life's journey, Carlos Ricardo is surely a man of all the Americas. And I'm delighted that he is also my guest this episode. A polyglot who has had a truly international upbringing with an unwavering ambition, which has been resolutely focused on a career as corporate man. He's a true dyed-in-the-wool marketer who brings an incredibly broad consumer marketing perspective to his direction of HP's in-house agency. In fact, you'll hear some operational solutions that Carlos has come up with here that maybe could only come from someone with his experience in the wider corporate world. Regular listeners will know that I always strive for high recording quality, and this interview coincided with my most recent trip to the US. I was in San Francisco when I learned that Ricardo had agreed to take part, and he very kindly invited me to meet him in person. So I drove out one early morning to Napa to join him at his fabulous Victorian clapboard home. And we sat in his garden to talk over, well, tea. Nature lovers among you might be able to identify some of the more vocal species of local wildlife who decided to join in.
Robert, thank you. Thank you for having me. I'm delighted to be here and eager to get started.
Carlos, tell us about your family background.
I'm Brazilian, but I was born in Rio, but my parents came to the U.S. when I was 3 years old. And my father came to work for the Voice of America, which is the media company for the U.S. government promoting democracy in Latin America. He was in charge of that program. And he was initially a radio guy. So before Voice of America, even before he was married and I was born, he worked for the BBC in London.
Oh, in London, yes.
Yeah,
okay.
So BBC London and then the Voice of America in Washington, D.C. So a guy
and
who...
And he covered something quite substantial in London as well.
He did.
Quite a big story, I believe.
He was the
breaking.
First Brazilian, well, the only Brazilian journalist to cover the coronation of the Queen in 1953.
Yeah, wow, okay. So he was sending news of that, was he, back
exactly,
home?
Exactly, okay. Exactly.
So you grew up in the United States, though. He wasn't traveling around then.
So from 3 to 12, we were in the U.S. Then we went back to Brazil.
Uh-huh.
Then he became a diplomat for the Brazilian government.
Oh.
We ended up going to La Paz, Bolivia, which I spent 3 years.
Where was this?
So this was the beginning of my high school years, was in La Paz. So that's where I first got immersed in Spanish, which is
right.
my third language, which I love. And then I came back to the U.S. for high school, and then back to Brazil for college, and then back to the U.S. for PepsiCo, which was the beginning of my career.
So you're truly a man of the Americas. Any Canadian involvement at all, just to kind of round it off?
Not only the Americas, because before coming to California 4 years ago for HP, we were in Madrid, Spain.
Wow.
Working, I was heading marketing for a bank called
okay.
BBVA.
So. Oh, we'll probably touch on that.
Exactly. So it's Americas, but Spain too. Yeah.
Before we go back into your history then, just very quickly then, just summarize what's it you're doing at HP right now? And then we'll dig into that a bit later.
Sure, sure. So I joined HP 4 years ago. I head what we call marketing services and creative production. So think about, there are four components to that. One is HP.com. So I oversee the team that creates all of our digital experience on HP.com. And we have now more sites. So we have Omen.com, which is our gaming, our site for our gaming products. And then there's a second team, which is called HP Studio, which is our in-house agency.
Yeah.
It's one of my passions. I love
okay.
it.
Well, we'll talk about it in detail. Yeah.
There's a third team, which is marketing services. So a lot of the back end, more operational work for the marketing yeah. team around the world. And then there's a smaller team called DMT, which is our digital marketing transformation.
Okay.
So the team that is helping the markets in advancing in our transformation agenda.
Okay. And as consumers, where are we seeing the fruits of your labor then?
Every time you go to Amazon, for example, and you're looking at our products, so the gold standard Amazon applications of how our products show up, the tutorials, what's in the box, the pictures of the product
yeah.
on top and front and back. And I'll explain a little bit the process later on, which is really interesting. Or social posts on LinkedIn or Instagram or Facebook. Digital assets when you are on a site and you see an HP banner for a specific product or a campaign that we have. So basically, essentially, we have big agencies like Wieden and Kennedy developing our campaigns, our marketing campaigns. Our studio, our agency, HP Studio, takes those campaigns and develops thousands and thousands of assets that we deploy in marketing campaigns, on our social channels, okay,
so
on
really
digital
anywhere
platforms.
That you see the HP brand being promoted as a consumer, we're seeing the work from your
yeah,
studio.
It's the amplification of those campaigns. The big creative we don't do.
Yeah.
It's taking that creative and
making it happen.
And blowing it out to a number of different formats and languages.
Let's go back then. Let's talk about your career starting, I guess,
as
a child. So you were growing up, obviously influenced in two different countries. Do you remember the world of marketing and advertising you were young?
It's interesting. I knew when I was, even way before high school, that I wanted to be in the world of brands and products and marketing and advertising. I knew it from the start. I was just fascinated by brands.
You like jingles? You like the graphics? You enjoyed watching advertising? They were the best bits of TV?
Maybe. But I knew it. I knew it. So as in my undergraduate was in business administration, I knew I wanted to become a marketer. This was in Brazil.
Yeah.
I knew that I wanted to join a multinational company in Brazil and then eventually be transferred because I had that international and global vein. I think it was obviously influenced by my father. And
yes.
So I knew I wanted to have not only become a marketer, but I knew I wanted to become a global marketer.
Right. So. Yes, because the world was already your oyster, I guess.
Exactly.
You traveled, and as you say, it was kind of part of the family fabric. I presume the house was filled with artifacts from all over the world as well, which so often happens as well. Yeah. So you went to college where then again?
So in Brazil, in the south of Brazil, a college town called Blumenau.
Okay, and what did you study?
So I studied business administration there. Uh-huh. Yes.
Okay.
And then I started. So my career was pretty much three phases. So it started in consumer marketing. The company that defined that first phase was PepsiCo.
And so this was straight from college? This is your first job?
There were two like internships before that.
But it wasn't, by the way, just as a side note, it wasn't a creative background you had here.
No.
It's a marketing background.
No, it was, yes. So the career I wanted was in your traditional product management type of career. So I joined PepsiCo in Brazil.
Was that exciting for you?
It was super exciting.
Really?
Especially because, similar to another place in the world, we were in the middle of a cola war between Coke and Pepsi.
Yeah.
Pepsi made a huge investment in Brazil in the early 90s.
Yeah.
And so I joined a team that was super, energetic, and it was pumped. And it was probably one of those things that I realized, and I always say that the best brand to be on is, for me, is the number two or the number three. I love being a challenger.
Having to try harder.
Exactly.
What was that? There was a car rental campaign, wasn't there, along those lines?
Was
it Avis?
Avis, right? Or Hertz.
They were proud to be number two or something.
Exactly.
There, against Hertz, yeah.
And there was, it was a company that, it was a brand that I fell in love with because of its challenger situation.
Yeah.
We were much smaller than Coke there, and we had to make every dollar of investment count.
So it wasn't about fractions of a percent of market share as it is in the United States. In there, you could actually make a difference potentially.
We could,
make a difference.
And then from there, we did an interesting program around sports marketing during the World Cup, where Coke was the official sponsor of the World Cup. And we used, because we didn't have the official sponsor, we took Brazilian players who were edgy and controversial and so we used a lot of the personality.
Yeah.
And New York saw it and thought, hey, this is a cool campaign. This is interesting.
And these ideas were coming from an agency or coming from within the marketing team?
It was a combination, I would say. It was a combination. But we relied a lot on a really, really good agency at the time, Almat BBDO, which was instrumental at the time.
Yeah.
So then I was invited to go to New York to help on the Pepsi Global team. Where that became...
Is that a promotion?
So
is
soccer, to use the American word, became a big platform like music was at the time. And it's a platform that's still
there.
But
how did this come about? You mentioned it very calmly. I was invited to go to New York. You were transferred to New York?
Yes, I was.
So how did you apply for that? Or did someone put their hand on your shoulder and say, Carlos, we need you?
No, it was basically, there were a lot of interesting things going on in Latin America, not only in Brazil.
Yeah.
That caught the attention of the headquarters.
But you were only a kid. You were like 23, 24, 25 or something. How long were you there?
I can't remember the age, but so then I ended up spending, it was 9 years in the U.S.
Okay.
With PepsiCo.
In New York.
In different roles, yeah.
Okay.
In New York, and then a little bit in Miami, too, because of the Latin American hub.
Okay, so, all right.
Yeah. During that, I would say the most interesting thing was being in New York and then having the opportunity of managing a brand on my own, which was 7-Up, which was cool.
Wow.
So it was no longer part of a larger team because Pepsi was a large team.
Yeah, yeah.
7-Up was a smaller brand. So the CMO said, hey, Carlos, would you like to manage this brand globally? And I said, oh, I'd love to.
Would you like to manage? So seriously, I've got to ask you, how old were you though when this, question was
probably
popped?
I would say probably early 30s.
Okay. Still quite young for such a thing.
And and it was great because we had this concept of global task force, which was you were overseeing a brand globally, but you had different people in different parts of the world that are part of your virtual team, right?
Right.
Where everything we did with them. So I had somebody who was overseeing 7-Up for, let's say, Argentina, which was on the task force, somebody in Mexico, somebody in Ireland, because it was a big 7-Up market, somebody in India, somebody in China. And we developed everything from our innovation platform, packaging, the campaigns.
Globally.
Yes.
Globally. So it was command and control globally.
Yes,
but it wasn't put out to the markets.
So the way we did it at the time was with this team, this what we call the global task force.
Yeah.
Which allowed, of course, that while we were developing it, we had input and from representation from around the world. So by the time we launched the global initiatives, they were very much, they had the input from almost everyone, right? So that was a fascinating experience for me.
Oh, my God. And you're traveling a lot, I guess?
Oh, yeah. It was when I think the time in my life where I got more miles.
And were you married at this point?
We were, yes.
Children?
Sophia was born in New York and Valentina when I was in Miami on a Latin American role. So both of them,
So you really were the kind of corporate guy there, weren't you?
I was.
You
know, it was fun. It was very
traveling
fun.
The world and bringing up a family.
And it was a super company. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Right, right.
And
okay.
Then PepsiCo took me back to Brazil on the snacks part of the business. So I became a VP of marketing for the snacks, which is Lay's, Ruffles,
and was this
Doritos.
To solve a problem in Brazil, or was this just moving people around?
It was and I had never, I had always worked in beverages and soft drinks, so this was an opportunity also in snacks, which I'm not going to bore you, but with beverages, you work through a bottling system. In the world of snacks, it's a fully operating company, so PepsiCo produces, distributes. So so it was also an opportunity for me as a marketer to have more levers to pull. So I go to Brazil, not only heading marketing, but I had marketing, R&D, and innovation.
So you could launch a new flavor.
So we were developing all flavors. We were developing new textures. We were developing new packaging size. So it gave me more of a 360.
Where did you think you were heading with this? So just to take a step back, were you literally just moving from one thing to the next, or did you have a grand plan that you had a wall chart with bits of string pointing? If I go here and there, and then this is my ultimate move. And
no, I knew that the snacks business would give me a broader view because you have the product component and the R&D and the innovation.
Yeah.
So that was part of my plan.
But were you ambitious within, like, I'm going to become CEO of PepsiCo one day?
I've always been interested in pushing the boundaries and doing things that would add to my career. So the ability to go into snacks with a fully operating position with the R&D and the innovation and marketing was a benefit for me from a career standpoint. And I took it and I said, okay, I would have liked it to be in another country, not necessarily Brazil, because I already knew Brazil. I've done Brazil.
Take that one off the list. But it was Send me to Iceland.
Yeah, but it was something that came up and I took. But interesting enough is that I started to get, at that time, I was enjoying myself. I was loving it. But I was also starting to feel that there was a change going on in the world that I wanted to be part of. So you're talking about a plan, right?
Yeah.
I knew at that time very clearly that I wanted to be part of the digital transformation that was going on in the world.
So we're in the early 2000s then.
Yes. Yeah. And what happens was, in consumer business, it's very hard for you to have a digital transformation because what you produce is, right? You produce something tangible.
You don't sell it directly.
You don't sell it direct. You sell it to Carrefour and to Walmart and to Safeway and what have you. So you don't control also the data and the information coming from
you
that.
You don't know who buys your product.
It's hard to sell a beverage in an app, right? It's something tangible that you're producing and you're distributing. So I started to notice, I thought, wow, I want to, having loads of fun, I could continue doing this for a long time. But I said, no, I want to go to a place where there is a true transformation going on. So there was a headhunter who called me about an opportunity in Spain with a bank that was going through, that was preparing itself for a huge transformation, going from a retailer to an online and a digital. And
okay.
I said,
A Spanish bank.
And it's interesting because I go, wow. First of all, how did you guys find me?
Why did you land on me?
And at the time, Robert, I had a very active marketing blog.
Oh, okay.
That I wrote a lot.
And you were embracing the digital world.
Yeah,
with your
and
blog.
I had a blog that was pretty active. It was fun. It was entertaining.
And it was your own thoughts.
It was observations and things that were going on in the world of marketing and comments.
Outed as a Pepsi executive at the time. I mean, was it part of your?
I mean, it was known in my profile that I was. Yeah. But I was talking about so many other things that intrigued me, that interest me, products that I would see and that I would love the experience. So in Spain, they were looking for a professional that was from Latin America because the bank is very strong in Latin America.
Oh, okay.
From Spain, but they have a huge presence in Argentina, Colombia, Peru, Mexico, and what have you.
Yep.
They were looking for someone who had experience in sports marketing because they were the title sponsors of La Liga. They were the official bank of the NBA.
You were on first name terms with Brazilian professional football.
And interesting, they were looking for someone who did not have a financial service background that was coming from consumer marketing.
Okay.
So, and for me, it was fabulous because when I heard, they want to go from a traditional retail bank and become a strong online and mobile bank, I thought, wow, this is exactly the type of thing I would like to do.
How cool is that?
And it was stretching me because after so many years in consumer marketing, here you have an opportunity to go into financial service. I go, wow, this is...
So in from different... the blog, they found out about you?
Yeah, they came out.
And was it the bank themselves that had found you or had their headhunter?
No, it was the headhunter. And then they presented me to the recruiter inside
the
bank.
Nowadays, those days rather, that meant putting on an airplane and flying into Madrid for an interview.
So I did. Yes, I went there.
And I
absolutely fell in love with the challenge and the opportunity and the fact that it was stretching me completely outside of my comfort zone.
Yeah.
And
well, it was kind of building on everything that you knew, but applying it in a completely different context.
Exactly. And those 5 years were absolutely magical. And then on the fourth year, I took a sabbatical of 6 months. Before I get there. So at the bank, what we did is I had to rethink everything, which was we had a marketing department, marketing team that was all about generating traffic to branches.
Yeah.
And now we had to generate traffic to our site, to our mobile app. We had to stimulate people to download the app, to become a client.
Digital transformation.
Absolutely.
Everything you wanted.
And then we had to bring in talent that was experts in UX and SEO. And it was just...
And this was all new to you.
This was all... Yes. It was fabulous experience. To the point that towards the fourth year, I took a sabbatical of 3 months and I went to Stanford for their executive program. So they have...
And they dispatched you for that.
They supported that, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it was all about... So the Stanford Executive Program is really designed for executives that are or going through a transformation, or in companies that are being disrupted by external challengers. And I thought, well, what a great opportunity to network and interact with. Yes. We were 150 executives from around the world.
Yes.
that were going through similar challenges. So that's a network that I still have today. I love them. It's fascinating that we
So
then going back to Spain after that experience really opened my eyes to so many other experiences that other companies were going through.
Is that why you left?
No, and interesting because while I was here, I ended up interacting with my former boss, who was the CMO of PepsiCo.
Oh, okay.
He was at HP. He was the CMO for HP.
Oh.
So I go back to Spain and going back to my work. And a few months later, he calls me and goes, hey, wait a second. We have a great position here to run print marketing for the Americas, for the US, Canada, and Latin America.
So these are the consumer level printers and
Yes, and commercial, and the commercial business.
Not the Indigo and stuff though. Or did it include
that was part of that too. I was head of marketing for print for all of the Americas.
Okay.
And so I told my wife, hey, would you like to go to California? So this was exactly 4 years ago. So
and what did she say?
So she said, yeah, sure, let's do it. So we came pretty much these 4 years, the first two were in print marketing, and then the other two were now in this role, which is a global role, providing services, as I mentioned, to all of the marketing community. We have 800 marketers in 60 countries.
And any thousands of SKUs, I should think.
Thousands. Don't ask me the number because it changes every month. So.
Yeah, it goes up. It goes up, I should think. So let's talk about that with HP and the in-house agency that you're running now. Can you tell us whether it existed when you got into that role, or did you create it?
No. It already existed. It existed as a pilot. So
initiative from the CMO.
So it was the CMO today. He was running global print marketing at the time. Mm-hmm. So his background was from agencies. He loves the agency world, and he understands how important that is, that partnership between agencies and clients to develop great creative work.
Mm.
So the first year, it was a pilot only with print. It was a very small team. The concept was, let's put together an in-house agency offshore. So it was... It's based in outside of New Delhi, in Gurgaon, India.
Yep, which is where our office is as well.
Oh, Gurgaon. It is
in Gurgaon. Yeah.
Okay.
So this was for marketing production, right?
Yeah. So the first year was what we call proof of concept. It was an experiment only for print.
Yeah.
And a small team in India, and after year one, it was like, wow, this is working well. We're getting some benefits. We proved the case. It was proven the case that the model worked in terms of savings versus doing all that work with agencies in the US or Europe.
Mm-hmm.
I joined after that proof of concept. And my objective was, okay, Carlos, how do you expand this to other stakeholders in the company? And how do you think about this? How do we take this to the next level?
And what was, stopping at that point, what was the motive for the pilot? What were they trying to achieve by setting up a small office in Gurgaon?
It was the ability, the flexibility to control much more the output for our development of assets, number one. Number two is agility and being in-house, the idea was we know our products and our service better than anyone else. We are very connected to the marketers in the countries. And there was a cost aspect too. Could we produce at scale with cost efficiencies versus doing it in the US?
And up to that point, you'd been working with production agencies in the US.
Oh, yes.
And paying $150 an hour or more or whatever it was. And without, but also not having that agility and that brand insight that you needed as well.
Exactly.
So you were having your offshore production, but you were linking it presumably with some sort of creative element, which was onshore, which was local.
Yeah. It's always been, the model has always been using the creative concepts that come in from the big advertising campaigns. Mm-hmm. That has always been there. Mm-hmm. But it was about flexibility, agility, and cost efficiency.
Okay.
So then when I moved into my new role in marketing services, and part of that is overseeing HP Studio, a few things came up. One is, okay, how do we, now that we've already serviced a part of the organization, which was print, how do we offer our services to all the other stakeholders?
Right.
And that means personal system, which is all of the team that develops, right, that all our PCs, laptops, our 3D printers, corporate, so there's corporate comms, the corporate communications, so all the stakeholders in the organization.
So how,
offering that service.
How do you do that?
Okay, well,
because working
we'll
with a small pilot with a relatively contained team is kind of, it's pretty linear, and you can kind of get your arms around it. But you need pretty robust processes to scale that up. So
exactly.
How did you do that?
So we're, I would say that we are probably 60-70% there. We are now servicing. So as we finished this fiscal year, we finished we ended our fiscal year on October 31st. Doing a recap, we now service every single business unit in the company. We have expanded our capabilities. We also, in that process, I forgot to say, we also incorporated two other teams that were kind of separate. We incorporated the photography team that does all of the production. Every time we're launching a product, all of the photography, product and lifestyle. We also incorporated packaging, so all the team that does all the packaging. Yeah. And we started to increase the capabilities in India, but also started to increase the team of account services here.
Yes.
To deal with
the marketers.
The expanded marketers.
And to face the marketers, I guess.
And especially because there's a large concentration of stakeholders, of clients, marketers in the US because of the global teams.
Yes.
And the other thing that we did was, we did a few things. The other thing was we said, okay, because you can do, as you know, right, an agency can do a number of different things. We said, okay, we're never going to be successful if we do everything for everyone. Let's choose.
So you define yourself by what you're not doing?
So we said, okay, we are going to choose a few things and be the best that we can and bring the best expertise to do a few things well.
Yeah.
And those three things are, and not necessarily in order, but the three things that we're doing right now that we're focusing on is, one is digital and social assets, right? So the ability to take a creative campaign and blowing that out to all the different media outlets for both digital campaigns and for social.
And is this to a media list that you're given, or are you also, is there a degree of strategy? Where are these going to land?
The media is interesting because parallel to all this story that I'm telling you, exactly 4 years ago too, we also decided to bring in media.
So good we for have, you. Good for you.
So
well
we have
done.
An in-house media
that's
team.
Awesome.
It doesn't report to me, but
yeah.
There's an in-house
but
media
But that's,
team.
I think, a very healthy thing.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So we said, okay, let's focus on what we call e-tail assets. And I'm separating that because it's a world in itself.
Certainly is.
So
yep.
We started by saying, okay, Amazon gold standards. So there are pretty much 13 to 15 different things that we have to do there, right? Tutorials, what's in the box, the carousel, the description of, I mean, every single component that goes into Amazon. And we're extending that to Mercado Libre in Latin America, MediaMarkt in Europe, JD.com in China, right? All of those and developing, okay, these are the gold standards and these are all the different for every single SKU. How do we have that together? So you tell us. The third thing we said is let's be the best in CG product rendering.
I was going to ask about that because you have your photography department, and I was wondering where that was coming in.
You nailed it.
I can't imagine every product doesn't have a virtual counterpart.
So what happens now is that before a specific printer or a laptop is launched, we have to start producing assets when we don't even have necessarily a physical product off the line.
Mm.
So we're using the design elements from the design team, what texture, what this and that, and my team is taking those together and developing the product renderings so that we place that in. So, for example, we do lifestyle photography in in workplace environments and home offices and all that.
With, you have studios?
With no product, and then it will just be inserted.
Oh, okay. So they're montage.
So that is a skill that we said, okay, let's really, really put emphasis on CG and product rendering because of all of our new product introduction agenda. And then the fourth one is AV, is audiovisual. So, we're doing a lot of internal, right? So it's videos for product launches, videos for some of the events that we do with the press, or just more, obviously, the big, big heavy lifting video is done by the agencies, but we do a lot of...
But you'll take those as well and adapt those, and I presume, we do, and the assets from those.
And we do editing, we do post-production, we do creating... different versions for different countries based on their need. And then I said we were doing a few other things. What we're doing now is also we are expanding beyond India, which is kind of obvious after 3 years. So the first country we identified that has tremendous, very local needs and is a huge market for us and a huge growth opportunity is China. So we put five individuals in the Beijing office. And we were able to hire with an account/creative profile.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So they are inside the marketing team there, listening to the different needs, creating those briefs, working on, so sending that need over to India, producing quickly.
Yeah.
And then they're translating, transcreating, putting it into Chinese for that specific market. So
very responsive to the marketer's needs while still having that kind of global control and brand oversight. And there is obviously some workflow, some management system underpinning all this that you've deployed at scale.
I would love to say that we're at a place where we are completely... I mean, that we're fine with our tools and processes. I would say we're in the process of. One of the things that we did deploy 2.5 years ago was we're using a CMP globally, mm-hmm. called Percolate, content marketing platform where everything is uploaded in terms of briefs and all the workflows and then all the assets,
yep.
with a common metadata architecture so that marketers can find and retrieve, right. and download
and track work in progress as well, or is
yes,
it only yeah
yes.
they can use it for that, yes. so does that you've got this team spread out around the world, and I presume you're here in your office here in Napa and you can press a button and you can see who's working on what.
I can
and
see that, yes.
what the volumes are, what the forecast is, where you're going to run out of staff in, you know, which month, so what's providing all of that.
So we're not at a point where we have... We're still looking for the right technology to help manage all the production within our team in India. So I would say the CMP, we put yep. a lot of emphasis to get up and running, but I still feel that we're not at a position where we have the right,
mm-hmm.
I would say, software to track the yep. activities that are going on at a very individual level. No,
yes.
We don't have that yet. But we're looking at options and trying to evaluate.
Yeah.
The my head of HP Studio is now kind of mapping the market to understand
okay.
what are those pieces of software that are missing for us.
Right. But you clearly have... Well, you don't have it. You have the intent to have it.
Sure.
And you can do those things. I was sure. slightly tongue-in-cheek suggesting, but you actually do. So when it comes to things like forward planning and budgeting and that kind of thing, devolves on you as well. That falls on you. So do you get visibility as to what's coming up next year? And are you able to harness the marketer's information?
I wouldn't say the planning is that robust because the marketers in the countries have the flexibility to use us or to use somebody local.
So you're not a mandated resource?
Absolutely not. And we don't want to be.
Well, that brings me to another question.
We don't want to be.
I'll let you finish this point.
We believe that we're only going to be successful if we become an option that marketers love because we are very well connected to the brand.
Yeah.
We understand their needs.
Yeah.
We're fast and we have good costs.
Rather than they resent having to use you because they're told to use you.
So I don't have the visibility of everything that's going to come in the 12 months because that is fluid.
But is there...
That's absolutely fluid.
Well, let me go back to my question there. Again, as a global company with all these people all working in their various markets, yes, you want them to volunteer to use you because they want to come to you. It's an attraction rather than a kind of compulsion thing. But how on earth do you get them to know you exist and that you can bring them value?
Oh, we do that constantly.
How?
I mean,
every time,
first of all, we have reviews that we do constantly to showcase the work. So every quarter that goes by, we have the opportunity of showcasing to marketers around the world. Oh, by the way, this is the latest and greatest on e-tails, latest and greatest on digital and social. These are some of the videos we've done. This is the work from CAD and CGI. So we have been doing that constantly, and it's always, and you have to continue to doing it because of obviously the turnover and new people
That's
coming
it.
In.
And so are you having to get in front of people, you yourself having to essentially be an ambassador for the
it's a lovely role to have. I mean, believe me. And but we do that constantly, and but I like to say very transparently is I love the fact that it's not a mandate at all.
No, I can see
all,
that.
At all.
See
it
that.
Should be. And there are things that, you know, sometimes a country will that is requesting to do something that is in our capability and decides to do it elsewhere. That's fine.
So where are you today then? Very quickly, how big is this department? We talked about these various parts to it, but how many people have you got?
So we're about 90 right now.
Okay. Including all the offshore
Yes,
locations.
But I have to say that a big portion of that 90, obviously they're not all FTs. Some of them are contractors, but it's around 90 people.
And are you having to show the value of these 90 FTEs on a regular basis into HP? Because there are savings being made by you being there.
Yeah, we do. We do have our, first of all, we're pretty much self-sufficient right now. So the what stakeholders are paying for our services versus our cost to operate is it's pretty much neutralized right now. So so this is not a cost accretive for the company, and we our expansion is always very careful. It's an expansion based on, you know, more stakeholders coming and the growth of, so we manage that very tightly just so that We are expanding based on market needs and based on the example I gave to you from China was one that there was definitely a need from the China team saying, hey, I would love to do this, but we need people inside our offices. And we work together with the Chinese team to kind of make that happen. We're very, very close to the different marketers.
Very integrated, right?
Yes.
Very
and listening to their needs. Mm. As I mentioned before, we're not pushing our work. We want to make sure that the work that we're doing is good enough for...
But you're clearly seen as an extension of the marketing teams themselves, right? You're just there. So, I mean, what you told me about China really rings to that. That those people are now right there at the elbow of the marketers.
Yeah, and then the other thing is, I think, which we didn't talk about so far, is we take feedback very, very...
Yeah, tell us about that. Yeah. How does that way? Is that structured in a structured way?
Yes, it is. We have... in fact, it's structured in a very, very nice way. Internally at HP, we have... we call... internally, it's the HP Agency Spotter. So all the marketers have... It's one digital location where they go and they rate all the agencies that provide services to us, whether it's global or local, and all the different types of agencies. And obviously, HP Studio is in there.
I have to say, Carlos, thanks so much for your time in Inside
Jobs
podcast. Now, thanks to the listeners and to Carlos Ricardo at HP for allowing me into his exquisite home to be part of Inside Jobs. I've met few in-house agency leaders who have had such a dynamic and wide-ranging corporate career. A big thanks to our fabulous partners at IHAF, especially Emily Foster, my producer Amy McNamara for making all these things possible, and Prerna Chabra at EKCS for handling the editing work. If you haven't heard the podcast before, then a very warm welcome to Inside Jobs. Do take a chance to visit us at our website at ijpodcast.com with the ever-growing back catalogue of episodes. There is something for everyone there, I think. You can also subscribe to our newsletter, and do also feel free to link in with me. Just say hello. It's great to hear from people in and around in-house agencies. And, you know, quite often, I'm always up for a chat. Thank you for joining us. Until the next time.